Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
I'll go into your van, witchy woman.
I'm Niamh from Ireland.
And I'm Emily, living in Chicago.
And we have never met in real life.
Fortunately, you don't need to live on the same continent to make a spooky podcast.
So that's exactly what we did. We created Ronan Pine, our folklore, mythology, and spooky stuff podcast.
You can find us on your favorite platform, and we already have over 35 episodes ready to binge.
Don't forget the spooky shorts.
Right. We also have a bunch of short episodes, if that's what you're into.
Come on, get spooky with us, and frick yeah, folklore.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the Outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay. I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode. How are you today, Mom?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from you guys. Or
always good to
hang out with you guys. Something along that fucking
let
line.
You guys hear us. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure. It's been a day. Yes. What story do you have for us today, Mom?
I have a story for you that's going to be a two-parter, sort of. It's about a guy, Franklin Floyd, and part one is going to be about one person associated with Franklin Floyd, and part two next week will be another person associated with him. Yeah.
Did I burp during that? I muted myself, but I see a big wave thing in it.
I didn't see anything. Okay. I didn't hear anything.
Okay, good. I let out a crazy, massive burp. So, okay. Cool.
What story do you have for us today?
I'm going to be talking about the Meng Zhaoguo incident. I'm butchering the name, but according to YouTube, this is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
And to go with my story, I have the Phoenix cocktail, which I just pulled up and now is gone. One second, everybody. Okay, there it is. So to make this cocktail, need 1 ounce coconut rum, 2 ounces pineapple mango juice, and 1 ounce of pomegranate liqueur. I could not find that, so I used vodka and grenadine mixed together. in a
depending on the grenadine, it could be made with could be made. I don't know.
I think this
I
is
also
be
could
okay.
not find pomegranate liqueur, or actually the recipe says pomegranate liquor, and so I tried to find anything pomegranate alcohol related at the liquor store, and there was zero pomegranate anythings. Okay. So I did pomegranate juice and vodka. So this is not a, it we'll may or see. May not be a decent representation of the cocktail, but
probably not. But if you can, I think it's going to be good. It sounds, all the ingredients sound tasty. So give it a try.
We'll find out. Okay, let's go. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird combination. Like, kind of feel like the coconut and the pomegranate are fighting a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Same.
It's like a weird clash.
I don't like it.
It's not terrible. I probably wouldn't make it again, but
it's really bitter. I don't know how it can be sweet from the coconut rum, but be bitter at the same time.
What kind of pomegranate juice did you use? The palm, like the stuff in the weird bottle? That stuff is super bitter. So that's probably what it was. Yeah, that's. I wonder if some simple syrup would have helped a little bit.
I think it would have made it too sweet. It would have made it grossly sweet. Not a fan.
Weird cocktail. Yeah. I don't know about it.
Too many competing flavors, I feel.
Yes. Okay. So let's talk about this Meng Zhaoguo incident.
Okay. I'm going to have to guess at the spelling because it sounds like I would not spell it properly.
I feel like my mute is picking up.
I'm not hearing again. Anything.
I don't think you're hearing it, but I think it's picking up on my mic thing. So I really hope that that's not the case.
Well, you get to edit it out, right?
Yeah, but if it's in the middle of you talking, then they're just going to hear me. Roar.
That's true.
Deep guttural burps. Sorry, everybody, if that's the case. Stop talking about burps.
Yeah, now you're just going to have to hold it for the rest of the recording.
In June of 1994, a 26-year-old timber worker named Meng Zhaoguo had experienced an encounter of the third kind.
Ooh.
Meng was a farmer and timber worker who was liked by most in his village. One day, while working with a relative, he looked up and noticed a white, shining object descending into the Phoenix Mountains nearby. Meng thought it could have been a helicopter crash landing, so he and the relative decided they would go check it out for themselves. If it was a helicopter crash, there might be people to save, or at the very least, they could scrap the helicopter for parts that could help their life in rural China. When they reached where they thought the helicopter crashed, they started looking around for signs of the crash. Eventually, they stumbled into a clearing and saw a large oval object with a long tail. This object was entirely smooth with no doors or openings or creases on it at all.
Ooh.
They approached the object, and when they got about 150 feet from it, they felt a surge of electricity that prevented them from moving closer, almost like a force field. While observing the object, a beam of light shot out of the object, and both Meng and his relative fell unconscious.
Ooh.
After they woke up, the object had disappeared, so they decided they should go to a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good
both
plan.
People passing out at once, it's...
Yeah.
Based on the new episode of Landman, I'm thinking there's a oil pump leak somewhere. Oh, yeah. Because I haven't watched it. Never mind. Sorry.
No spoilers because I haven't watched any of the new season.
That's not too much of a spoiler. But. So some researchers were sent to the area where they found scorched and knocked over trees and crushed boulders.
Ooh.
So obviously something had crashed there, but it wasn't there anymore. Meng kept feeling surges of electricity every time he came into contact with something metal. And he first noticed this when the doctor used the stethoscope on him.
Oh, that would be awful.
That'd be freaky, yeah.
Ooh.
The doctors didn't notice anything abnormal, so they sent him home. Several days later, Meng was sound asleep with his wife and child when a 9-foot-tall woman with 6 fingers on each hand floated through his wall.
No. Uh-uh. Nope, get out. Nope. Don't like it.
I don't know how tall the buildings in China are inside, but I feel like they're not 9 feet tall, especially in a rural village. So I want to know how...
Maybe.
I don't know. Why would they need 9 feet tall ceilings?
Well, ours are mostly like 9 to 10 foot, some 11-foot ceilings. Most standard
I'm
buildings.
I'm not making jokes.
Okay.
He awoke when this thing levitated him off his bed without disturbing the wife on the other side of the bed, sitting right next to him.
Wow. So he
just picked him up, levitated him,
floated
while his
up,
wife was still asleep.
And she's there napping like a little baby.
Yep.
Ugh. I don't like it.
The woman then proceeded to have sex with Meng before vanishing as quickly as she had appeared.
When researchers investigated
his claims, they brought a Geiger counter, which just so happened to go entirely haywire and break when they put it up to the part of the wall that she had floated through.
Okay. Did it also go berserk when they waved it around his genitals?
I didn't see anything about that. So obviously this freaked him out, but only days later he would have another visit from his friends. Just like the previous encounter, Meng was asleep with his wife when suddenly he awoke in a very strange room. Meng was aboard the UFO and was surrounded by similarly tall, dark cloak-wearing aliens.
Mm-mm.
When Meng asked why they were here, they spoke to him and said, "To observe you, your planet, and to escape danger." When Meng asked what they meant, the aliens showed Meng a screen that showed Jupiter. Meng watched as a comet struck Jupiter. Some people might think this all sounds a little crazy, but on July 17th, 1994, comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 crashed into Jupiter. So,
okay.
Being in rural China in 1994, how would he have any knowledge of this happening?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they had maybe radios, but that's probably about it.
Well, the internet was not
in rural China.
No,
it was
not in rural China.
You're using that.
No, I mean, it would have been like in the infancy stages, but did
maybe
exist.
Television, but I don't.
Well, he could have television.
Farming
yeah.
village in China? I doubt
maybe
it.
Not.
Granted, I've never been to rural China, but I feel like they're not the most technically advanced in 1994.
Maybe not.
So just as quickly as he had appeared in the crash, he was back in his bed as if nothing even happened. Meng went a while without contact from his friends, but in 2016, they visited Meng again, this time to bring him a gift. An alien baby from the lady that fucked him.
I'm just kidding.
That was a joke. They actually brought him a piece of the comet that had crashed into Jupiter.
You scared me.
When the rock was analyzed, it was determined that it was super rare precious metal called terbium.
Okay.
And that was the last contact that he's had with his friend since then. We waited a while to visit him again since 1994, but
yeah,
I thought he needed a piece of space rock for his
collection. They're like, here you go.
Yeah. But that is the Meng Zhaogu incident in China.
I don't like it.
No.
No.
I haven't heard a 9 feet tall alien before, so it's interesting.
No. I mean, they do talk about that they're very tall.
Maybe they just seem 9 feet tall because he was really short.
Very possibly.
Maybe. Very possible. Maybe they were actually 6 feet tall and he's just 4'11 maybe. Or something.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like tall people are everywhere around me all the time, and they're really, really big when they're just, you know, 6 feet yeah. tall.
Let's hear your story.
Interesting.
Mom.
Okay. Oh, I gotta pull up the falling asleep here. Stand by. Here we go. Okay. I'm gonna get this up and running. We're gonna talk about Cheryl Camesso. Okay. She was born June 28th, 1970, in New York. When she was 8 years old, the family moved to Florida. She enjoyed singing and dancing, and people thought she was very nice and helpful. But she had somewhat of a troubled childhood, too, and she often ran away from home in her teen years. Sometimes she would be gone for days or weeks. She dropped out of school at 17 years old, and by the time she was 18, she was working as an exotic dancer in the Tampa Bay area of Florida. Like many people in transient jobs, she shared rides, relied on coworkers, and trusted people she barely knew. That trust would end up costing her her life, as so many stories of ours go.
That's why I don't trust
people. You trust the wrong people. Yeah, don't trust people. That's the moral of the story. Don't trust people, and then keep your mouth shut. Cheryl crossed paths with Franklin Floyd through her work. Floyd was living in Tampa under the alias Clarence Hughes, but for the sake of clarity, I'm going to refer to him as Floyd. He had a lot of aliases, but we're sticking with Floyd because that's ultimately who got in trouble. At the time, he was living with a young woman he claimed was his wife. Her name was Tanya Hughes, and she had a young infant son. The child was not Floyd's, though. Tanya worked at the same strip club as Cheryl, and the two women became friends. Those who knew Cheryl described her as outgoing and social. She had family who loved her and expected to hear from her, but in April 1989, Cheryl disappeared. Her disappearance did not immediately spark a large investigation because, essentially, she was an adult. She had a kind of mobile and somewhat transient lifestyle. There was no obvious crime scene, nowhere to look back at and go, something bad happened here. There was no body, and there were no witnesses stepping forward with any answers. She simply just vanished. In the days surrounding Cheryl's disappearance, Floyd had been seen with her. Multiple people saw Cheryl and Floyd arguing shortly before she went missing. They didn't think much of it at the time. They were just like, whatever, you know. The last confirmed sightings of Cheryl placed her in Floyd's presence, but there was nothing more than just reports of a fight. Shortly after Cheryl vanished, Floyd and Tanya abruptly left Florida. Their trailer was found burned in what authorities later described as suspicious circumstances. The fire destroyed personal belongings and potential evidence.
I feel like most car fires are pretty suspicious unless they happen on a highway or something.
It was a trailer, not a car.
Oh, okay.
Trailer. But that's where they were living.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was like a single wide or a travel trailer or what, but... Regardless, their house burned and they disappeared. Floyd and Tanya fled the state, leaving behind unanswered questions and a missing woman no one could yet explain. For years, Cheryl remained just that, missing. 6 years later, in March of 1995, construction workers made a discovery off of Interstate 275 in Florida. Skeletal remains were found discarded along the roadside.
Oh, gosh.
That's never a good thing. Clothing fragments, jewelry, and personal effects were scattered nearby. The remains were transported for forensic examination. Investigators quickly realized this was not a recent death. Time, weather, and animals had taken their toll on the skeleton. The body had been left there deliberately.
Do we know what part, like, stage of skeleton? Is it like medical?
Well, it'd been 6 years.
Medical room skeleton. Okay, so yeah, probably a medical room skeleton. Where it's
pretty close to that. I think a lot of decomp had happened.
That's gross.
And they had to, you know, try and figure out who the skeleton belonged to. It's not like they didn't know who it was for like almost a year. Through forensic comparison, dental records, and identification of personal items, the remains were eventually identified as Cheryl. Her death was ruled a homicide. That's a pretty good assumption based on the condition of her body and that there was some trauma to it. Not a big leap to go the homicide route. The investigation that followed would eventually circle back to a familiar name, Franklin Floyd, who again had a bunch of names, but that's who he really was. By the mid-1990s, Floyd was already incarcerated for other crimes. He had kidnapped his wife, Tanya's son, from an Oklahoma elementary school in 1994. The year before Cheryl's body had been found. So he was in jail for kidnapping at that point. Floyd would later confess that he killed Tanya's son, but the body was never found. At that point, Tanya was dead herself. She had been killed in 1990 under suspicious circumstances, and although police had an idea that Floyd was involved, there was no evidence to prove it was anything more than an accident. As investigators revisited Cheryl's case, they uncovered a crucial piece of evidence that Floyd had left behind years earlier. In 1991, Floyd abandoned a stolen pickup truck in Missouri. Inside the vehicle, authorities found photographs hidden beneath the seat. The pictures were gross. They showed a woman who'd been bound and beaten, and she was naked. Her face was bruised, and her body showed signs of severe physical abuse. The images were graphic and disturbing. Investigators could not initially identify the woman in the photographs either. Years later, after Cheryl's remains were discovered and identified, those pictures took on a new significance. The family recognized Cheryl's jewelry and physical features in the pictures. Forensics experts were able to compare the injuries seen in the pictures to the trauma found on Cheryl's skeletal remains.
I know that it's important to have the victim identified, but if you were shown the pictures of your family member that had been murdered, I feel like that's even more traumatic than finding out that they've been
murdered. Yeah, like, that she'd been murdered. I totally agree with you.
I think it's important. Totally agree with you. Identify the person in the picture, but yeah. Still, it's like,
it's still traumatic, and they're not sleeping well after seeing that, I'm sure. And then knowing what happened to her in the end, you know, essentially everything lined up. The photographs depicted Cheryl during her captivity and before her death. Medical testimony later established that Cheryl suffered severe blunt force trauma. She had injuries to her skull that were consistent with repeated blows. The manner of death supported a prolonged and violent assault. The case against Floyd slowly came together. Prosecutors established a timeline, placing Cheryl with Floyd shortly before her disappearance. They demonstrated Floyd's sudden flight from Florida after his house burned down. They presented the photographs found in his possession. They connected the forensics evidence from Cheryl's remains to the injuries visible in the images. In 2002, more than 13 years after Cheryl disappeared, Floyd went on trial for her murder in Florida. The trial lasted 9 days, and jurors heard testimony from forensics experts, law enforcement officers, and individuals who knew Cheryl. They saw the photographs recovered from Floyd's truck. They learned about his history of violence, manipulation, and sexual abuse. This guy's a real piece of work. We'll just say that.
Like it.
The prosecution argued that Floyd kidnapped Cheryl, held her captive, brutally assaulted her, and then murdered her. Then finished it off by dumping her body along the interstate before fleeing the state. The defense, of course, has to do their job, and they attempted to raise doubt by pointing to the time lapse and lack of eyewitnesses to the killing itself. But the weight of the physical evidence proved overwhelming. The jury convicted Floyd of first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to death. Floyd would remain on death row for more than 2 decades. He was never executed, but he eventually died in prison of natural causes at the age of 79. With his death, many questions went unanswered, and next week we will discuss his relationship with his wife, Tanya, and her suspicious death. But a little spoiler, he was only convicted for Cheryl. Maybe they could have gone after him, and they were like, whatever, he's already on death row. It's fine.
It's got to be bizarre. So she must have died in a weird way.
She sort of. I mean, not really. But there is a lot of, like, there's some weird shit that happened with her story and him. So.
Interesting.
Well,
so I feel like sitting on death row for 20 years is cruel and unusual. It's like,
yeah,
if you're going to like retry, I mean, I guess that makes sense, but if you know you're gonna be executed, you know you're guilty, just do it tomorrow,
right? You know, get done with.
What's the point?
Yeah, don't make
it's
me
just
sit
taking
here.
More tech. I mean, it's sure it's expensive to kill someone through prison, but
right,
it's probably more expensive to keep alive. So I just,
you'd think for 20 yeah. years.
There's so many people that are on death row that just had been sitting there for probably even more time. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's weird.
I would not like it. Yeah. Do you have a chaser for us today?
Yes, my chaser is a watch recommendation for the movie Code 3.
Oh, yes.
I figured you were going to use that
soon.
It was pretty interesting. It's about, it's based around one shift of an EMT crew, which is 24 hours long. So they kind of show their whole day and stuff. And it's, I want to classify it as a comedy, but it's also fairly dark, like,
yes,
obviously
it is, but
the stuff they're dealing with,
yes,
but it puts a comedic spin on the trauma that these people have to go through, and kind of like makes you see a little bit more of like what they go through. I'm sure it was dramatized, but
I don't know. I feel like
from the stories
I feel
that
like
I've heard,
it was pretty real.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, having known a lot of first responders, both in law enforcement and paramedics, it seemed like it was pretty spot on.
In like a bigger city like that, like, I'm sure the paramedics in Klamath have a completely different job than the paramedics in New York or something.
To some extent, like, yeah.
Yeah, but I found it a very interesting watch and kind of gave me more perspective on like the healthcare system in total.
Like, right.
Because they show everything that these guys go through from like picking up the patients, diagnosing them, saving them, and taking them to the hospital, and like the paperwork that has to be done and shit. And like, it's really interesting to watch. But it's got Rainn Wilson from The Office and Lil Rel, who's a comedian. And so it's got some good
like
comedic stuff in it. and enough to keep you interested and not be like, this is sad. But it's
right.
Got like, it's a comedy with deeper undertones, I guess is the best way to put it. But it's a good watch.
Yeah. It's really good. I liked it a lot. Yeah. I liked it.
What's your chaser?
My chaser is an article that I found recently that they've done some excavation on a villa in Pompeii that had been buried by ash, and it was the believed to build the villa belonged to the second wife of Emperor Nero. But what was really cool was they found all these fresco paintings on the walls. So the walls themselves had been painted, and there were peacocks and all these really cool designs. I found the article on Good News Network if you want to go look it up, or if anybody wants to check it out and you don't want to go to that website or can't find it. Fresco. Said it, they were fresco. I don't know the difference, but they weren't paintings that were hung on the wall. They were, the walls were painted.
Like a mural.
Yes, exactly. And there were peacocks and different things. Okay. And
so
and it's amazing that they could recover it when it was covered with ash from Mount Vesuvius.
So it looks like, I just looked up fresco art. It looks like it's like things like the creation of man, like the painting of Jesus at the Last Supper, I think is what that's called. So like classical style, like lots of cherubs and shit. And
yeah.
Which would make sense for the era because a lot of that painting stuff was done in Rome and stuff. But I would highly recommend if anyone is ever near
Pompeii,
you should go check it out. It's super definitely go check interesting. It out. So I'm sure everyone knows the fucking story. I feel like it's taught in every single history class ever.
Right.
But even American history, they're like, let's talk about Pompeii. Right. But
cautionary tale super weird. Of getting your entire village destroyed by a volcanic eruption.
Yeah, it's just super cool. And you get to see like the mummies, I guess you would call them fossils. I don't.
Yeah,
I guess they're people fossils.
Some of them. Yeah. It's really cool.
Super bizarre.
The paintings from this particular villa. I mean, when we went to Pompeii and we walked around, everything was.
It was mostly just stone. Like there wasn't just much color.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nope.
So that's super
very monochromatic. Yeah, they covered. Was I mean, it like perfectly really amazing. Preserved? Yeah, pretty much. Damn, you could totally tell it was a peacock.
That is super bizarre.
Yeah.
And it's cool like when you go there, it's still a like archaeological site. So you'll just see people
digging in the
fucking ground that are working.
They're digging they're, like, and recovering
uncovering
stuff.
History. And it's like,
yeah.
I'm looking at history and people finding history at the same spot. Like
this I know. It's wild.
It's really interesting. And like I don't think there's a lot
like
of
a
places
snake
in the world that
eating
you can go
its own
see
tail.
That. Yeah, it's super
very
bizarre.
Cool.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you
it
for
does.
Listening, everybody.
Definitely. Right. Thanks, everybody.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.